It's showtime.
Okay, Tokyo,
South America,
Australia,
France,
Germany,
UK,
Africa.
Here we go. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Pycod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. You know, sometimes we start a little bit late because little Miss Lucy Perb Morning Paw has decided that she likes to sit in the official broadcast chair. And once she is ensconced in the official broadcast chair, she is loath to leave. It took a few extra seconds, hence the 16-second late start to the program. Hi, I'm Robin. It is Prayer Meeting Wednesday on the Horn. And I got to tell you that the little old blue-haired ladies, well, they outdid themselves this evening. Yes, indeed, they did. Cabbage rolls, mashed potatoes, that tomato gravy, little homemade coleslaw. Oh, they did a fantastic job. And now that people are getting vaccinated, who knows? We may be back to having imaginary services in our imaginary cathedral, and we may even be getting close to having people gather together in the imaginary fellowship hall for the imaginary fellowship dinner. My goodness gracious, how wonderful. Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed. It is Wednesday, the 7th day of April, 2021. This is The Horn. HeadOn.live is where you'll find us on the interweb tubes. I say this every night, and a lot of people scrub past it, and I understand why. But one never knows when one might have, you know, new folks dropping by. So if you'd like to be part of the merry, wacky, zany, real-time multimedia extravaganza that is the Horn chat room, a wonderful way to augment your listening experience when the program is live, pop on by HeadOn.live, click on chat room, pick yourself out a screen name and a password, and early arriver Squeaky will greet you as others wander by on this prayer meeting Wednesday. And a lovely prayer meeting Wednesday it is. It is a balmy, naked radio, 76 degrees in the fabulous Horn Studios at the magnificent Kincaid Mansion. Please do not use your imagination. It's theater of the mind, radio is, but it's nothing that you want to spend any time visualizing, believe you me. And outside, mercy sakes, yeah, it's only 3 degrees warmer, you know, 79 degrees. Oh, yes, 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 yes. The good stuff is coming. The good weather is coming. And I can't wait. But every program here at The Horn begins with gratitude, and this program is no different. No, no, not at all. That means that thanks go out to our 7th day of the month subscribers. And what that means in particular is thanks very kindly to Reed and to Brock and to James. Thank you all so very much for being partial sponsors of the program. Thank you to David for jumping in overnight. That's good news. Thank you, David. That means our fundraising goal for the evening, because it's been a rough first week of April here. The fundraising goal for this evening is down to $830. $830, $230 gets, knocks out Monday. Stand by, pollen. Yeah, that wasn't the Rona. That was pollen. Been going on all day long. Stuff blooming all over there. I love it. I love it. It is, yeah, that time. The little white automobile will soon be turning pollen green, I have no doubt. But nonetheless, we've got $830 to raise to get even with the week. That's $230 for Monday, and then all of Tuesday and all of today. It would be great to knock some of it out so that we're not sweating some sort of monumentally terrifying number come Friday on the front porch. Yeah, and well, how about that? Happy birthday to Randy Radar's mom. I'm so very happy for her and happy for you. Randy Radar's mom turned 88 today. Happy 88th birthday. Indeed, indeed, from all of us here at the Horn Family Community Congregation. And many happy returns. I think you could probably flake obsidian with them by now. Steve in New York asking, yeah, I'm checking in. I was wondering just how damn desiccated those butter mints will be by the time we get in the fellowship hall. The fact of the matter is there was a coyote outside the cathedral the other day, and you never know about coyotes. I love animals and everything, but they can carry rabies, and you know they'll attack your other pets, and they'll mate with your dogs, and it's just not a good thing all the way around. And I got out the handy dandy wrist rocket and grabbed one of those butter mints out of the bowl, and it was sufficiently hard that it encouraged the coyote to move on its merry way and go to some other cathedral and pester their animals. Mm-hmm. That's how desiccated they are, Steve. That's how desiccated they are. And, of course, Vaccination Day. Robin! Well, it was good to hear last night that Steve, Joey writes, that Steve and Georgia Stan, Miss Karen, and little Cletus all got their shots because Jeffrey was worried that in a state with a legislature so bullshit backward as Georgia Stan, the vaccines might not be available. Or, Steve, did you and Miss Karen and little Cletus have to go underground and covertly acquire your vaccine because of the threat of Confederate Governor Brian Kemp and his southern sycophantic, get it? Clueless, clamoring clods. Oh, dear. Carl and the Copper Clapper Caper. Let's not do that. All yelling, we just got to have our Second Amendment rights because them left-wingers are just going to try and take our guns and then shoot us with them their vaccines. Oh, it's hard on the throat. Jeffrey, however, would like to take a shot now.
Yes, I can just hear all the maggots in Georgia yelling about how the vaccine is going to have a chip in it so the government can spy on them. Well, hell, you Confederate fools should not be so concerned about a chip in your mask or your vaccine because you morons have been carrying a chip on your shoulder for decades over the loss of the Civil War.
Well, that was well played, Jeffrey, especially in light of the final story of last night's program of the purloined potty, the Jefferson Davis seat. Mm-hmm. Yes, and for those of you who are not familiar with Atlanta, I am. There's a very progressive section of downtown Atlanta called the Underground, and there's plenty of vaccines to be had at the Underground. Yeah, maybe not. Speaking of Civil War, Robin, you ironically mentioned the Rwandan Civil War of 1994 last night during the show. Ironically, last night was the 27th anniversary of the eve of the Rwandan genocide, which started on April 7th and lasted until around the 15th of July. During those 100 days, members of the Tutsi minority ethnic group, as well as some moderate Hutus, were slaughtered by armed Hutu militias. The most widely accepted scholarly estimates are around 500 to 600,000 Tutsi deaths. And Jeffrey would like to add some civil thoughts of an incivil time. Wait a minute. 500,000 to 600,000? Where have I heard those numbers recently? Oh, yeah. That's the approximate number of deaths we have due to the virus brought to you by an uncivil idiot who nearly started a civil war about 2 months ago at the United States Capitol. Yes, Donald Trump called the virus a hoax, and moronic minions believed him.
And to all you gun-loving goobers, that just goes to show you, no matter how armed you may be, your gun will not kill the virus, but you just maybe a good vaccine will. So lay down your arms, lift up one of them, and get the vaccine. Excellent advice, Jeffrey. Excellent advice. Well, just as it turns out, just by coincidence, both Billable Rick and I are going to get our first shots today, Joey says. Jeffrey and I are going to have ours at approximately 4:30 Eastern time, so they should the shots should be in arms by now. Yep. And Rick, if he can get off the golf course and maneuver through rush hour in L.A., will have his shot administered at approximately 6 p.m. Pacific. That would be 9 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, right about as I'm getting started with the Molloy program. Mm-hmm. Joey and I wanted to schedule our vaccines together, but for the very reason we need to have the vaccine, we're unable to get our shots together because Joey and I are not boarding a plane anytime soon with the threat of the viral spread. Yes, the three of us were hoping to meet up in L.A. for the day and have what we would call a little... Wait for it. Yes, Joey, Rick, and I were hoping to meet up and have a little vaccination day. This has been Joey's Journal for Prayer Meeting Wednesday, the 7th day of April, with Giraffery not flying high, but just laying low on our way to the vax venue. Good luck. It doesn't hurt at all. You won't even feel the needle enter your arm. You'll probably be a little sore tomorrow in the arm, but that's about it. So far, so good. I mean, tomorrow, wow, kind of counting the days now, aren't I? Yes, I am. So is Agnes. Tomorrow will be a week post-second shot for Agnes and me. And then a week from tomorrow, the 15th of April will be, well now, 2 weeks post-vaccination and supposedly as immune as one can be. Mm-hmm. And thank you, Joey and Giraffery. There's a $10 Vax Venue Challenge on the table. That means that if that challenge is met, we will be down to $810 to fully fund this week's horn effort at broadcasting. And I should probably say something now in the way of a program note. I've waited as long as I can. I kind of hate to have... I was hoping to have it done during shitty weather, but no, didn't work out that way. I'll let you know how it all plays out, but the oral surgery is about to be scheduled. I've waited and waited and hoped that we could get a little further into the fundraiser for it, but it is what it is, and I've got enough to get that much of it done. And I'll let you know what kind of downtime I'm going to have and what the odds are that I'll be back on air lisping like Sylvester the freaking cat. Yeah, well, if you're gonna lisp, you may as well transition first, right? Sure. Why the hell not? Today is 2 weeks since the second Pfizer for Steve in New York. Congratulations. You know, that's worthy of a cowbell. Absolutely. Absolutely worthy. And by the way, Harold, president and CEO of Sochtris, the secret open carry Happy Trails Roundup Society, watch the mail. Something is on the way. It's a premium from a while back. And Steve got that solved, and heck, it may already be there. And it'll be wonderful if it is. I had no idea, but Lee in New York tells us there's a giraffe vaccine version. There's a giraffe vaccine version before we can vaccinate kids. Well, we know it's safe for giraffes, but being how, you know, can't get the thing and can't get the Rona in the first place. The scientists aren't quite so sure on the kids, but they are beginning testing on 12 to 16-year-olds. So, fingers crossed, there's really no reason it shouldn't work, but still, there you are. Lamar the Magnificent says, as a liberal Dem, explain to me why I would want to take their guns when all they're going to do is shoot themselves anyway. It does tend to work out that way, doesn't it? It's not them. It's not their guns we really want, though, is it? It's making sure that people can't just go and buy themselves a Freedom Protector and go blaze away at a bunch of massage parlors, frankly. Or a grocery store.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm going to, I'm struggling with your, Dave and the Blind, multi-plan homes fly a certain giraffe is well known in this computer has been running loose with some pretty interesting parts. Why, I suggest a fundraiser for the tons of 15 days are free on one side and a member of the community of our choosing on the other. May the best puncture win, your buddy Dave and the Blind. Might want to help clear that up a little bit, Dave. It was a, I think something got lost in the translation. Or maybe I'm just not reading so good all of a sudden. I don't know. But it's prayer meeting Wednesday, and we will get to some prayer meeting Wednesday stuff in short order. But I saw a story earlier today that sort of leapt off the screen at me. It's reminiscent of something we have talked about for literally years now. You know, the name that I gave the NRA, the National Ruble Association, well, I decided I liked it, and I've been using it ever since. And the NRA is in court right now. They're in trial, the NRA is, or don't care. The NRA is in trial in bankruptcy court because they're trying to bankrupt their way out from under out from under the laws of the state of New York where they were incorporated. And they've got a hankering to go and reincorporate and engage in a little bankruptcy fraud, perhaps, in Texas.
Mm-hmm.
It, right. Well, the trial is going on, and it's being covered by Law and Crime News, and a reporter, therefore, by the name of Adam Klesfeld. And he's sitting there watching each and every day of testimony. That's how we found out, not too terribly long back, for instance, that in the aftermath of the slaughter at Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School in Florida, Parkland High School, or Parkland, Florida, it turns out that Wayne the Peter, you know, the guy who stands in front of crowds and tells them how dangerous it is here in America and everybody needs a gun because it's dangerous out there because black people. Yeah, that that Wayne the Peter. Well, and we actually have people in the Horn Family Community Congregation who know a little bit about yachts. And in the aftermath of the immediate aftermath of the shooting in Parkland, it turns out, due to, as a result of testimony in this bankruptcy trial, that Wayne the Peter took flight. Yea, verily, like unto Joseph and Mary fleeing into Egypt, Wayne the Peter says he was feared for his life. And because Wayne the Peter was afeared for his life, he needed somewhere to take refuge. He said to, I actually thought that given the security threat that I was under and the fact that the NRA was at almost a loss as to how to protect somebody with the amount of threat that I was having, that my work and the threat that came with it, this was a place that I could go and be safe, and it was related to that I did it. And I'm not stuttering. I'm reading the stutters that come from the court record. Yeah. As parents were picking up the pieces of their blasted children killed because Wayne the Peter had spent a lifetime screaming that America needs more goddamn guns, he hightailed it onto 108-foot luxury yacht I've never seen a non-luxury yacht. And stayed there until the coast was clear. Literally, the coast. The Florida coast, as a matter of fact.
Uh-huh.
Because of the threats I was receiving. Private citizen, with the amount of threat that we were having, and this was the one place I hoped I could feel safe, where I remember getting there and going, thank God I'm safe. Nobody can get me here. And that's how it happened. That's why I used it. Somebody needs to explain to Wayne the Peter that getting an email that says, Wayne, you sorry, soulless son of a sex worker, son of a syphilitic sex worker, I hope you rot in hell, is not a threat on his life. That's more of an imprecation against his immortal soul. Sure. But he was pants wet and skeert. And he described himself as having had a presidential level of threat against him. And he just happened to have a buddy with a 108-foot luxury yacht. Again, I'm kind of wondering what an 108-foot yacht that ain't luxury. What is it? What has it got, vinyl flooring instead of teak? Yes, I sat there thinking, my God, they can't get me here. They'll have to come at me with sharks with frickin' laser beams. That's what they'll have to do, because America's a dangerous place. And one of the people that we supported having guns, young man, just proved it. I sure hope he doesn't start swimming. No, wait, he's in custody? Good, oh, okay. Sure is a tough guy, that Wayne the Peter. I remember in the aftermath of the shooting at the massacre at Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School, I remember us asking, gee, where's Wayne the Peter and his statement saying that now is not the time to discuss gun safety, now is the time to let him, because it's never the time to talk about the coordinated war that the National Ruble Association has waged on the innocent people of the United States of America. Brother Deacon Asa saying, it sounds like Wayne pulled a Rittenhouse. They should look for him at the underage beer hall in Wisconsin. No, Wayne's not that kind of guy, Steve, or Asa. Wayne is accustomed to a certain sort of lifestyle that involves young women assistants who are clad in bikinis and spend their work hours as interns floating around the pool in an apartment complex in Fairfax, Virginia, maybe. Because that's a thing that happened. Mm-hmm. But he did. He ran away. He scampered. Brave Lapeter ran away. No, bravely ran away. I didn't. Yes, you did, Wayne. You nasty little chicken shit, you. You miserable, you poor comparison to pond scum. And they went on questioning Wayne the Peter, and he said, the name of the yacht was Illusions. And anytime he used it, it was fully stocked with food, and there were a couple of water scooters. I think those are also known as okay, water scooters it is. It makes him sound even more pathetic. And there was a crew aboard of at least three people. One of them was the cook. And Shannon Watts over at Moms Demand Action for Gun Sense responded, the only thing that stops a bad guy with a gun is a good friend with a yacht. Mm-hmm. Because that's what he used. That's what. The only way to stop a bad guy with a gun is a good guy with a gun. Or maybe taking the gun away from the bad guy, or not letting the bad guy get the gun. It's complicated, this gun algebra of the National Ruble Association. Uh, Well, the funny thing is he needed to use it in the summer. The slaughter at Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School happened in December. Mm-hmm. Great guy, Wayne the Peter. But that was just the tip of the iceberg. Because, like I said, there he was. There was the NRA in court, and something kind of, sort of, I guess, slipped out. Adam Klasfeld at Law and Crime News reported that as they were going over expenditures from the National Ruble Association, the Brewer Law Firm, which worked for the NRA at the time, as did a PR firm called Ackerman McQueen, they subsequently had a bit of a falling out with the NRA. And Ackerman McQueen asked John Fraser, general counsel to the National Ruble Association, about a particular invoice that was sent to Fraser's office in 2020. Damnedest thing, you know? Because this one invoice was for $59,155.25. And Fraser was on the stand, and the question was put about this invoice from the Brewer Law Firm to NRA, to their general counsel, John Fraser, and Fraser was testifying. And they said, what was this invoice, $59,155.25, and why is it labeled, wait for it, you know it's coming, don't you? Why was it labeled Russia? And then all of a sudden, an NRA lawyer leapt to his feet. Objection! Objection, Your Honor! I object! On what grounds, Counselor? How about client confidentiality? And the judge in the case, one Harlan Hale, said, yeah, that'll work. And struck the questions from the record. So if you were to get your hands on the transcript of this trial, you would see nothing about a question over a $59,155.25 invoice sent to the office of the NRA's chief legal counsel with a subject line, Russia. Not even a sidebar. Not even a conversation about what would establish that as client confidentiality. Among other things, the general counsel, this is, let's say, irregular, shall we? Mr. Fraser said that he had no idea that the NRA was going to file for Chapter 11 bankruptcy. And in fact, he didn't find out about it until the day they filed it. Funny how you wouldn't tell your chief counsel of the whole shooting match, literally, organization that you were filing for bankruptcy. Now, somebody's either perjured himself or there was some serious skullduggery going on. And, you know, whether it's the yacht or the Russia, $59,155.25. That is what the number was, wasn't it? Yep, $59,155.25. Memo, Russia. I guess that's better than putting Vlad on it. But it sort of vindicates what I've been saying for the last several years, that it is not the National Rifle Association, that it is, in fact, the National Ruble Association. Yeah, he really did testify back about the yacht. He said, they simply let me use it as a security retreat because they knew the threat I was under, and I was basically under presidential threat without presidential security in terms of the number of threats I was getting. Yeah. And it turned out that this is just precious. This is beautiful. We had to... Because they're going line item by line item in this bankruptcy trial. And there's a bill for spraying for mosquitoes at the residence of Wayne the Peter. And according to the Washington Post story, that too was a matter of security. Do you realize how many anti-gun mosquitoes there are out there? Yes. They're called Anopheles mosquitoes. Take that, you giraffe! Anopheles mosquitoes are a dire threat to the security and safety of myself and my family and, well, the entire United States of America. Yeah. Or then there's the $6.5 million mansion that he shook down the NRA for. I don't know. Is this on court TV? Because this could be pretty entertaining. Darlene in Connecticut noting, yeah, I saw that article about Wayne LeCoward, and I was disgusted. What happened to just getting one of his many guns and protecting himself? What happened to, they won't get my gun till they pry it from my cold, dead hands? Well, that was Charlton Heston's line, really, Darlene. And what happened to a good guy with a gun and all that bullshit? I thought his freedom protector was absolute, 100% insurance against the bad guys. Jeez, I guess I could say tots and pears to him, but nah. I say fuck him, miserable fucking coward that he is. Yeah. And of course, you know, he had his head so far up Nitwit Nero's fundament that... You could see Wayne the Peter's smiling face every time Trump sneezed. Gosh, I hope it doesn't hurt too little. Ah, we have a clarification on the miscommunication earlier from Dave and the Blind. A pun duel fundraiser between a certain giraffe and a member of the communities. Everybody. And Dave adds as a P.S., Christine is seeing better, and she's marking time till her checkout date, the 28th day of April. Good, 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 good. So vision does seem to be returning, Dave. That's wonderful. Yeah, poor little Wayne, little Peter. This is Dan. He's skeert. Yeah, he is. He's just all terumified, pants wet and everything. I bet he had to change his shorts the minute. Imagine being terrified of being shot by the Parkland shooter 6 months after the Parkland shooter done all his shooting was safely incarcerated. NRA trial. Lee in New York says curious about the National Ruble Association trial. Will Maria Butina testify? I think she's beyond service of process at this point. We don't even know if she's alive. But I remain convinced that's where the real smoking gun probably is. All those sweet, 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 sweet rubles that likely got laundered through the National Ruble Association into the war chests of people like Lindsey Graham and, of course, Geezer Disgustus. Hopefully, maybe after the bankruptcy trial, some enterprising prosecutor in the state of New York, either in Manhattan or perhaps the Attorney General's office, will take a look at, Steve, in New York, does New York State have a a RICO statute modeled on, say, the federal RICO statute? Yeah, might that come in handy? I mean, mosquito spraying is a security threat. The need to zip off to a yacht is a security threat. $6.5 million mansion. Why not? Security threat. Sure. Almost begins to sound like pattern practice, doesn't it? Regarding that $59,155.25 invoice, Brother Deacon Asa says, a fur hat! It was a fur hat! Yeah, I mean, you gotta pay those little minks a lot to get them to sit still and be a hat for you. Oh, God. But it just seemed like a good place to start because it just highlights the corruption that permeates the entirety of the GQP, the Grand QAnon Party. Lee pointing out, Mary and Joseph fled and stayed in the manger. Well, no, the baby stayed in the manger. Wayne the Peter fled to a yacht. Doesn't seem right, does it? But, you know, we could hope. Just sit right back and you'll hear a tale of a fateful trip that started on the... No singing! Why do you compel me to sing? We know better. And Lamar the Magnificent pointing out, he was on a 1500s era Viking longship, or was it a Roman galley? Or, oh, who gives a shit? Le Dick. He is that. And yeah, as Ralphs points out, Court TV is showing the Derek Chauvin trial, which just keeps kind of getting worse for Derek Chauvin, which means it's going to be all the more infuriating and frustrating when the jury lets him walk. I mean, you are expecting that, aren't you? Because I am. It doesn't matter how compelling and how lead pipe cinch the evidence is. Cops walk all too often. They walk. But my goodness gracious, the police in the Chauvin trial are lining up to testify against Derek Chauvin. And I remarked that it was really unusual for the chief of police to testify against one of his own. But maybe all these cops are lining up to say, no, no, he did everything wrong. That's not us. Because it is them. It is them. There was expert testimony from Jody Steiger in the trial today, a use of force specialist. And he testified that it was deadly force that Derek Chauvin used. And that it was inappropriate. Jesus, inappropriate. Inappropriate is wearing white after Labor Day. Inappropriate is, I don't know, wearing pearls with cut-off jean shorts. Inappropriate is trying to eat fried chicken with a knife and a fork. This is something beyond inappropriate. Jody Steiger went on to testify, and the pressure being caused by Chauvin's body weight could cause positional asphyxia, which could cause death. Right. And this expert in use of deadly force, of course, comes from the LAPD, who said, my opinion was no force should have been used once he was in that position. An officer is only allowed to use a level of force that's proportional to the seriousness of the crime or the level of resistance. And this goes to the question that Derek Chauvin's pettifoggers are trying to raise, that to the extent that, no, he died because he had drugs in his system. Even if it was like a tiny molecule, drugs killed him. And the jurors, at least the ones who aren't nodding off, going, yeah, he shouldn't have done them drugs. A Minneapolis Police Department officer said, we tell officers to stay away from the neck when possible. And if you're going to use body weight, to pin it on their shoulder. Uh-huh. And, of course, Derek Chauvin sat there with his knee on George Floyd's neck and reached into his pocket and appeared to play a little pocket pool. He was enjoying it. And, you know, we're going to do this again. The other three killer cops, Tu Thao, Thomas Lane, and J. Alexander Kung, they're going to be tried later this year. Because justice, right? Yeah. Justice. More proof, says Matt in San Francisco, that there is no God. If there was, Lapeter would have drowned. Yeah. Prayer meeting Wednesday. Right. Proof deadly force, Matt adds. He applied force, the man's dead. Next witness. Defense, the prosecution rests. It should be that easy. And Lee points out, I would put my money on a hung jury, but I'm not making or taking a wager. Okay, there's another one. By the way, Lee adds, in New York, inappropriate is eating pizza with a knife and fork. Trying not to ruin dinner. I don't think I ruined dinner. It's okay. Unless there are people who are really put off by wearing white after Labor Day or something. Yeah. Jeremy adds, a reporter told several news broadcasts that at least one of the jury appeared to be sleeping during the chief's and several other officers' testimony. I hope you're wrong that he walks, but I fear you could be right when the juror is sleeping during a murder trial. Yeah, but remember this, Jeremy. The job of a trial court is to make the facts and the incident being recounted as boring as possible. You don't know boredom until you sat there and fought over the jury instructions. And then you have to sit there and listen to the judge read 40 pages, poorly, I might add, to the jury. And they have to be read. And it has to be done because you can't just hand them the sheaf of papers and say, go in and sort it out for yourself. Because in the American system, we're making a record. You know, kind of like the record in the NRA bankruptcy trial is not going to include the $59,155.25 bill marked Russia. But we're making a record because when the thing goes up on appeal, and it will go up on appeal if Chauvin should happen to be found guilty, and Chauvin won't see the inside of a jail cell god for years at most. He's facing, if he's convicted on the second-degree murder charge, he's facing 40 years in prison, tops.
Now, maybe that's effectively a life sentence given Derek Chauvin's age. I don't know. But again, even if he gets, even if the judge throws the book at him and he's convicted and sentenced to the 40 years, he will not serve it all. He'll be out, paroled. Maybe he can go get a new copping job. No, because he'll be convicted of a felony. So he'll be a private investigator. Of course, says Darlene, I'm totally expecting the jury to let Chauvin off. This country will explode when that happens. It'll be proof positive of what we already know, that the criminal justice system is broken, and I will add, a complete wreck. Or it will be proof that the criminal justice system operates exactly as it was designed to do. But it will operate as it has always operated when black men are slaughtered by white men. And I think that is the greater horror than the idea that it would be proof that it was broken. Proof, in fact, that our criminal injustice system is fine as frog's hair. Yeah. So there, that. A little bit of good news. A couple of days old. We spent a lot of time last night talking about... Darlene says, hang on! And how many years were blacks incarcerated for possession of marijuana? Oh, I know. And you can find those inequities all over the criminal justice system. 29 men got incinerated past being recognized as human, formerly human beings at Upper Big Branch. And that was a result of screwing around with safety regulations, and Don Blankenship was convicted of a misdemeanor for it. A misdemeanor. But a little bit of good news. Like I said, we spent a considerable amount of time yesterday evening talking about these noxious laws all over the United, all over too much of the United States. Attacks on little children. And a lot of that is reactionism by these bigoted, hateful states. Reactionism to the existence of these kids in the first place, but also to federal action. This is the ongoing tension, constitutional scholars would say. This is the tension that exists between the federal government and federalism and the sovereignty of the several states, the petty fiefdoms. Because it was a real big damn deal when Merrick Garland ordered up a memo that said that LGBTQ plus students are and will be henceforward protected against discrimination under Title IX of the Education Amendments of 1972. And that says you cannot discriminate against students based upon sex. Something similar existed under the Obama administration, but then, you know, back in 2016, a guy who lost the popular vote but went on to become president because of the operation of a constitutional anachronism from our vicious slavery past. It was there we go. Very good. Dave number 11. Axiom number 11. Justice is a farce. In all too many instances, it is. You're right. You're right, Dave. The memo was authored, dated March 26th. Law and Crime and the Hill, I guess it only became public on April the 5th. And it was authored by Pamela Carlin. She argued the Bostock case in 2019. And she said, quote, when an employer fires a male employee for dating men but does not fire female employees who date men, he violates Title VII. The employer has discriminated against the man because he treats that man worse than the women who want to do the same thing. And that discrimination is because of sex. And we got a 6-3 victory out of it. An expansion and acknowledgement of freedom. Pamela Carlin is now the Principal Deputy Assistant Attorney General for the Civil Rights Division of the Department of Justice. And she said, after considering the text of Title IX Supreme Court case law and developing jurisprudence in this area, the division has determined that the best reading of Title IX's prohibition on discrimination on the basis of sex is that it includes discrimination on the basis of gender identity and sexual orientation. And so taken in conjunction with President Biden's executive order previously entered, it basically scrubs all of Nitwit Nero's bigotry from the executive branch. Because, among other things, the vicious creeps who inhabited that administration had said that, well, okay, so you got your little Bostock decision. It's only going to apply to employment. It doesn't apply to kids or schools or anything like that. You might recall Ms. Carlin as well as being the witness in the first impeachment trial, or the first impeachment, rather, not the trial, but the impeachment in the House, who testified that, yeah, what he did in shaking down Ukraine constituted bribery. And she was, of course, right. And so it seems that the Department of Justice, under Merrick Garland and, of course, under Joe Biden, are going to make this stick. And so, consequently, to the extent that it will it involves Title IX and prevents discrimination based on sexual orientation and gender identity, it kind of means, if I read it correctly, that these stupid goddamn bills that are coming out of places like Arkansas and Alabama and Tennessee and all that gotta go. They're in conflict with Supreme Court precedent. Of course, it'll cost the people of Alabama and Arkansas and Tennessee and North Carolina stand and the lot. It'll cost them a lot of money to have that proven to them. Kind of like how it cost them a lot to have the fact that they couldn't secede from the Union proven to them. Cost them a lot of money, a lot of blood, a lot of treasure, a lot of heartache. And yet, 2021, and here we damned well are again. But I'll take my victories where I can get them. And considering it was 6-3 on Bostock, maybe we can dare hope that when Alabama and Arkansas and Tennessee and the other stands go up on appeal, that it'll bounce. That their statutes will be found to be odious and offensive, not only to the people they're trying to hurt, but to the Constitution itself. Because that decision in 2019 was 6-3. Well, even if you consider the presence of Amy Covid Barrett, 5-4. Crossing fingers. No, really. Crossing fingers.
Oh, and by the way, thank you, Harold, for the note. Harold said he received his premium today, so thank you very kindly, Steve, for handling that. That's awesome. Enjoy, Harold. Enjoy. Because chartreuse is some pretty special stuff. And no, it's not Moran Monday, and it's not Titanic Tuesday. But my God, we've got a Marsha Gedness Blackburn sighting, and you can't just ignore that. She, or whoever the poor thing is that she pays to handle her social media, decided they wanted to attack the American Jobs Plan. And it, you know, we understand that it's designed to repair America's crumbling infrastructure. But it also has elements to it that make it more likely that working, struggling families can keep a job. Jobs, jobs, jobs. You know, the Republicans, it's all about the jobs. Yeah, yeah. And so, Marsha Gedness Blackburn decided that she was wrought because the bill contains $400 billion. $400 billion for elder care. You know, $400 billion to make it more likely that older Americans can live with something resembling dignity in their later years. Yeah, the Family Values Party is attacking the segment of the population that votes most reliably for. Throw Granny out on the goddamn street. Ain't got time, Granny. Hit the road. Get to work. Can't have you laying around. No. Got it. Shades of the days back, what was it, 2012? When Paul Eddie Munster Ryan was inveighing against layabout grannies out there eating all that food and spoiling all of his Republican fun when that money could have gone to poor little corporations with their noses pressed up against the window pane. Yeah, that's a thing. I mean, they couldn't. What happened to complaining about Planned Parenthood? I mean, they're down to pissing and moaning about elder care. What's the argument there? The Biden administration is putting their priorities over Americans' priorities. It's about anything but infrastructure. $400 billion toward elder care. Oh, sweet Jesus. But that's who they are. I wonder if they'd vote for it if maybe there was some QAnon care. Or maybe a bail fund for the people who attacked the Capitol on January 6th. Yeah. Nah. I mean, there's money in that infrastructure bill. It's not going to the infrastructure. There's money in that infrastructure bill. It's going for, I don't know, sciencey stuff, and medical stuff. That's not infrastructure. I mean, you want to have an infrastructure bill for elder care, that has elder care in it, then put Granny to work spreading some fucking asphalt. What do you say? Marcia, 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 Marcia. You poor freaking idiot. But, oh, by the way, I had a note from Randy Radar earlier. I guess Randy being a bit of a little ray of sunshine. I'd like to offer the following wet rag. Many people in Michigan who were fully vaccinated have caught the Rona. I know. And in point of fact, Gretchen Whitmer has done as much as she possibly can. And for her trouble, she got the capital of Michigan attacked by maggots, dressed up, of course, as refugees from a Ted Nugent cosplay convention, bringing their real, live, honest-to-God assault rifles into the Capitol. And everybody going, well, I mean, you just got a rifle. I mean, whatever. Not like it's an army or anything, or they're going to shoot them. But Michigan is spiking. And among other things, Gretchen Whitmer, like I said, has tried to do as much as she possibly can. Michigan has the highest number of cases, the highest case rates, and the highest rates of coronavirus hospitalizations and intensive care unit use in the United States. Its positivity rate is up 340% from 6 weeks ago. They've gone from 4.3% positivity on February 19th to 15.6%, you know, today. Those are not good signs. And Governor Whitmer yesterday said that it might be possible for Michigan to raise restrictions on most of the remaining businesses that are limited this summer if vaccines increase in the state. She told CNN, if we're successful and people come in and do their part, we could very well be in that position this summer. But the problem is getting a vaccine. It's not as easy as going to the store. The Biden administration has done they've done a fantastic job of trying. It's the succeeding part. And it's been a mess for a variety of reasons. When the first few doses came out, for instance, down in Florida, it was last Sunday on 60 Minutes that they ran the story about how vaccine tourism, vaccine cronyism was a thing in Florida. When frontline healthcare workers and first responders and the like needed to be vaccinated, suddenly Ron Monkey Up DeKlantis opened it up to everybody 65 or older, especially the ones in white maggot communities. And then people started zipping in on jets and the like and getting their shots. It was a mess. Gretchen Whitmer had her life threatened. Gretchen Whitmer had an actual kidnapping, trial, and execution plot laid against her, which was eventually uncovered. And in Michigan also, the variant issue is a problem. There are 12,505 confirmed B117 variant cases. Michigan's got 1,817 of them. And it's more contagious and therefore more deadly. 7 cases of the South African variant are present in Michigan. And they got 2 cases of the Brazil variant. And all of those things mean that there are probably a lot more than that.
And so when she said it might be possible if we get vaccinated and do the right thing that we can start opening up in summer, the CDC and the head there, Rochelle Walensky, said, I would advocate for a sort of stronger mitigation strategies, as you know, to sort of decrease the community activity, ensure mask wearing, and we're working closely with the state to try and work towards that. And I'm sure that Governor Whitmer would like to do all those things. But Jesus jumping Christ, the legislature, the Republican legislature of Michigan, is going bananas trying to make sure that she can't try to protect the state. And Dr. Walensky said, if there's high community transmission, I encourage communities to consider adjustments to meet their unique needs and circumstances, like canceling Little League. Well, okay, Little League's outside. She said, such as refraining from youth sports that are not outside and can't be conducted at least 6 feet apart. We got friends, several of them, in Michigan. And I fret. And I worry. As one might well expect. And they're trying to surge the vaccine there. But apparently, no, it's not apparently, it's for real. You can't force someone to take it. And sadly, there is an aspect of Michigan that is Alabama with deeper snow. Remember, it was Michigan was the home of the militia movement that led to the bombing of the Murrah Federal Building in 1995. And they didn't go away. They just went to ground. And they're still up there marching in the upper Michigan woods with their goddamned AR-15s and grunting and hooting and barking about freedom. It's in the Constitution. You can't make me take no shot. I don't want no Bill Gates 5G liquid microchip in my body. And most, and even, you know, around here, I see a lot of people wearing masks. I still see way too many sub-nose COVIDiots. And chin strappers. And then, of course, there's the regular COVIDiots who are just mask holes.
Don't care who I make sick, because I'm freedom, and Jesus is going to protect me.
And it's worrisome. And that's why even after we're fully immune, by God, it's masks everywhere. No two ways about it. Because a year of a pandemic is wearying, isn't it? It's wearisome. And God knows, well past wearisome, is the heartbreak for the people who have lost loved ones, family members, those empty seats at the table that Joe Biden spoke so eloquently about during the campaign. But we're not the country that went to the moon anymore. We're not the country that put the final nail in the coffin of global fascism in the fifth decade of the 20th century. We're not the country of, you know, we go to the moon not because it is easy, but because it is hard. We're not that fucking country. We're not the fantasy of Ronald Wilson Reagan, old 666 himself, when he was out there babbling semi-coherently about,
it will, mommy, it's morning in America.
We're the can't-do country. Because 33% of the population being fucking idiots is enough to hold the rest of us back. Yeah. They are, as Agnes points out, the party have let Grammy and P-Pop shuffle off the mortal coil. How did that happen? Anybody want to take a run at that? How did we go? I mean, were we always infested with idiots? I mean, what? We landed on the moon a year after Dr. King and Bobby Kennedy were slaughtered. But it gave us some notion that somehow maybe we were a little better than we thought we were. Well, I know. Robin Kincaid. Little ray of sunshine. And if one of the questions is how did we get here? How did we stop having any greatness about us? How do we start it up again? I know President Biden thinks that a key part of that is to bring us all together. And I understand that. And I'm just still trying to figure out how we sing Kumbaya with a bunch of people who think that there's a cannibal pedophile cult in the basement of a pizza joint in Washington, D.C. that doesn't have a basement. I mean, we're still doing great things. In the coming week, it blows my mind, in the coming week, NASA will attempt something truly monumental. We will attempt powered flight on another planet, Mars. That's mind-bogglingly complex and breathtakingly inspiring. But that's a tiny, tiny percentage of the American population. I mean, I guess we... Do we still make great video games? Apparently we design TV channels. And we do great CGI. But are you like me? Not, I mean, like me, but... Do you have that yearning for something to reach out and latch on to that says this is greatness? Anybody? Bueller? I mean, if we started a massive effort to create high-speed rail from coast to coast, I'd get really excited about that. You know, we make advances in medicine, but it's not available to everybody. It's available, it's pay to play, baby. We've got the Webb telescope that's going to come online, I think, next year. And astronomers and astrophysicists and astrobiologists and astroarchaeologists and the like. I don't even know if astroarchaeologists exist. I can't imagine it does. Are all excited. But this culture, and bear in mind, I am mindful
of what Gil Scott-Heron wrapped in like 1970, Whitey on the Moon. We talked about that here at one point in time, but can we not walk and chew gum at the same time? Stephen, New York says, greatness, you yearn for a land on the moon moment. I think the almost vertical vaccine ramp up is close to that. It's something, and it's inspiring, but we're still too far away. The Biden administration will meet its goal of 200 million vaccines. But how do the larger question is how you bring people along the barking and hooting and grunting contingent? Because I think it's becoming abundantly clear, and I've got it in the stack for the Malloy program, but it's becoming abundantly clear that this id-driven modern Republican Party isn't coming with us. They're going backwards. They want to hide behind walls. We saw that for 4 years. And I keep wondering, what changes that? Is the only thing that changes that war? So that we can have somebody to hate? God, there's an abundance of creepy shit out there around the world right now. Saw a story today that Taiwan says that it's giving strong consideration to shooting down any Chinese drones that happen to violate what Taiwan considers to be its airspace and China considers to be its. No, that couldn't possibly cause a problem. But then I'm not saying that Taiwan shouldn't. But holy shit. China going after Taiwan? Would we step in? What of Japan? How about Australia? Malaysia, Indonesia, Philippines. Oh wait, they got a Trump running their country. Then there's our partners in peace. The Israelis. They're trying to, it's like a day after I saw a story saying that one of the negotiators in the, hoping to pull the Iran agreement back together, said that it's on the right track. And then today, I see a story from the New York Times that alleges that Israel quietly, it's always quietly, let us know that, yeah, yesterday they sank an Iranian vessel in the Red Sea with a mine. And that did in fact happen on the very same day that American and Iranian negotiators were sitting down to talk about the 2015 nuclear agreement. The Iranian media remained as calm as they can be. And they just reported the sinking of the ship in the Red Sea. And they didn't say who done it. But that comes on the heel of the assassination by the Israelis of the head Iranian nuclear scientist. Uh, over at Amwaj Media, A-M-W-A-J, Amwaj.media, Mohammed Ali Shabani said Israel appears to be stepping up attacks on Iran to undermine diplomacy. Same catch-22 for Tehran as before. Respond and get blamed. Don't respond and invite further attacks. One exit, statements of condemnation from Iran's counterparts in Vienna. Will we have the nerve to do that? It remains to be seen. When news of the mine attack got out, over at the National Iranian American Council, Jamal Abdi, the president there, said some U.S. lawmakers advocate for Israel to be in the room for any talks with Iran, presumably so they can blow negotiations up from the inside as well as the outside. Yeah, our partners in peace, who to this day cannot enunciate a coherent argument as to why Iran should not have nuclear power. I don't like nuclear power. It's not good here. It's not good anywhere. It wasn't good in Fukushima. It wasn't good in Chernobyl. It wasn't good at Three Mile Island. And it wasn't good when they almost melted the core onto the floor in Alabama when they were looking for gas leaks with a fucking open candle flame. They found one. But, and I've been asking this question for years, and there is no coherent answer to it. If you were surrounded by nuclear states that hated your guts, wouldn't you want one too, a nuclear weapon? If you looked at the fact that Kim Jong-bad golf pants is still in power and has never taken a bowel movement, just like Jesus. Yeah, thanks, Brother Deacon. That little bastard's got nuclear weapons, and somehow or another we've managed to keep the South Koreans and ourselves below the North Korean border. And we haven't gone in and dropped any bombs or smart this or mother of that. I think I'd want a nuclear weapon, too. How about a nuclear stand down through the entire region? How about if nobody has one, Iran doesn't need one? And this is not me being a fan of the Iranians. Religious maniacs with all apologies to Gertrude Stein. Israel gives up theirs, you know, the ones they won't admit they got, but everybody knows. Pakistan gives up theirs. India gives up theirs. Oh, wait, Russia. And the neighborhood gets maybe a little bit safer, a little bit saner. And will there be a consequence for Israel? I mean, it's not like they have any ownership interest in the Red Sea. If you buy the mythology, you know, they walked across it and they didn't stay and develop it. But yeah, according to the New York Times, an American official said the Israelis had notified the United States that its forces had struck the Iranian vessel about 7:30 a.m. local time. Okay. Any explanation for why? Oh, no, just to fuck up the negotiations. So you're a negotiator sitting in Vienna, and the Iranians go, hey, you know, they did it. Yeah, I know that. It's kind of like how you respond when you're talking to a friend about your maggot family member. I mean, you do know that your auntie there thinks that there's a pedophile cannibal cult of child face wearers operating out of the basement of a pizza joint that doesn't have a basement, don't you? Yeah, I know. That's them. I can't do anything with them. I can't do anything about them. And we just got to get past it.
which kind of goes to something Steve in New York said a few minutes ago. How do you bring people along? You don't. You work like hell to move the train forward and hope they eventually want a piece of the action and even if reluctantly get on the train. And hope that they're not sitting there with pry bars trying to pull up the fucking track. Giving up nukes in the region, Steve adds, who's going to actually ask those countries to do that? There's no way we can ask that question without the, yeah, but you actually use them. Well, that was then. We've wised up a little bit since. We saw the horror of what we did. Maybe we could start by apologizing. Damnedest thing, isn't it? So there's any number of opportunities on the planet right now for shit to go sideways. We spend so much time talking about the behavior of the maggots here and the anti-vaxxers and the COVIDiots and the mask holes. Well, the Germans have a word for it, too. Can't recall it offhand. But there are massive demonstrations. There have been massive demonstrations in Germany. And the cops come out, and the demonstrators, you know, the bad ones, aren't wearing masks. They're not social distancing. And some counter-protesters come out wearing masks and behaving responsibly, albeit protesting. And the cops go after them. And not the people who are sitting there and hooting and spreading disease. I guess there's a certain retrospective element to all of this. But it was last summer when peaceful mask-wearing protesters did their best to remain safe at the same time as pointing out, at the same time that they were pointing out the manifest injustices that arose in and around the slaughters of Breonna Taylor, George Floyd. They got fucking gassed. On the other hand, 6 months later, the petulant white people, the maggots, go shrieking and screaming, attacking the capital of the United States, doing things the Confederacy itself couldn't accomplish. And you can't even get consistent condemnation from the right wing in this country. You know, Ron Johnson, a month or so ago, saying that he wasn't afraid while those homicidal maniacs were trying to find Mike Pence to hang him and trying to find Nancy Pelosi to hang her and erected a gallows. Now, Ron Johnson wasn't worried about them. He would have only been scared if they were black people. Again, not to be a little ray of fucking sunshine, but that's worrisome. Jude in the Great Northwest pointing out, trying, yet that old limbic, oh, I'm standing right with you earlier, dear Robin, exploring dances with possibilities. That's why remaining wide open is a refined aspect of who we are. When one is wide open, even the slightest ray of light energy can connect us. Continue to breathe. Thank you, Jude. Thank you, dear. I do. Try to take a breath. But like, I suspect like me, you want so much more of this country, and it's getting a little depressing wondering if we're capable of it. Steve in New York pointing out, a man convinced his will is of the same opinion still. Truth. A man convinced against his will is not convinced. As to what we used to do, Lee in New York says, The end of next year will be 50 years since the last person stepped on the moon. Only 4 of the 12 who walked on the moon are still alive. And when you say it, when you put it that way, Lee, you remind me that there are young people, the reasonably intelligent young people. And you can find them on the interweb tubes. Because I just can't get over this. Who say that Helen Keller wasn't real. Helen Keller may have been real, but she wasn't really blind. Okay, maybe she was real, but she wasn't really blind, wasn't really deaf, and wasn't really mute. That was a vast conspiracy of the late 19th century. And we don't even have to wait. There's a substantial contingent of people who will tell you flat out, look you in the eye, dead serious, and say, oh, no, we never landed on the moon. That was all a big Hollywood production. They just threw that whole Apollo 13 thing in there to make it look more real. It's not encouraging. No, it's not Dummkopfen, although they're that too. Yeah, I know. Yeah, our buddy Reverbo pointing out that hopeful future of ours. You mean, Reverbo says, besides helium-filled pants, still waiting on them too. Damn, those things would be fun. Haven't figured out the whole means by which the helium pants don't flip you upside down and make you float up feet first, but it's just such an intriguing possibility. But you see stories about what the Israelis are doing, you know, our partners in peace. And you wonder if we're in a race against time against the fucking morons. But again, what a difference. What a difference an election makes. Today, the Biden administration announced that the United States will again return to supporting the UN agency that gives aid to Palestinian refugees, and that we're going to start with a cool $150 million. Let me guess. That's maybe a 20th of what's needed. But they're gonna. It's more than the Maggot administration did. On top of the $150 million, we're going to put in $75 million in economic and development assistance for the West Bank and Gaza. You know, Gaza, the world's largest open air concentration camp. We're going to kick in $10 million for peace building efforts, whatever, however that's defined. Secretary of State Anthony Blinken issued a statement and said, U.S. foreign assistance for the Palestinian people serves important U.S. interests and values. It provides critical relief to those in great need, fosters economic development, and supports Israeli-Palestinian understanding, security, coordination, and stability. And this is all on top of the $15 million in COVID assistance that we promised to the Palestinians. You know, because the Israelis, who have done a fantastic job of vaccinating their own people, have sort of kind of not done dick for the people that they keep in open air in the world's largest open air concentration camp, claiming that it's the Palestinian authorities' duty to vaccinate. Meanwhile, the United Nations Relief Works Agency for Palestine Refugees has been clawing and scraping to exist ever since 2018 when Nitwit Nero said, fuck the Palestinians. And COVID is on the rise in the occupied in the occupied territories. Funny how your next door neighbor can be having a viral outbreak, and the people you're next door to, it's okay. And this, again, as is the case with everything we talk about in this regard, it's a start. It is by no means a solution. Brother Deacon Asa is suffering a bit right now. Yes, yes, we never landed on the moon. The earth is flat. And Kim Kardashian, the woman who leaked her own porn video in order to get some attention, is a fucking billionaire now. The BBC reporting that according to Forbes magazine, Kim Kardashian West, the West will probably be falling off of her name in fairly short order, has cracked the $1 billion ceiling because of her cosmetics and fashion lines, not to mention the money she's made being famous for being famous on TV. Also included in the $1 billion are endorsement deals and investments. And she has entered the Forbes World Billionaire list, which has 2,755 members. Up at the top of the heap, of course, is Jeff Bezos, $177 billion. The BBC goes on to list that somebody who created a dating app, Whitney Wolf Herd, is worth $1.3 billion. Tyler Perry, you know, Madea. Madea films. Tyler Perry's worth a cool billion. And Miriam Adelson, who has somehow managed not to follow her hubby Sheldon into the great beyond, well, she's sitting on a cool $38.2 billion. Yeah. And something just tells me that from a planetary viewpoint, there's something wrong with a planet that has 2,755 billionaires. Will it be in our lifetime that well, let's see, Jeff Bezos at 177 billion, so he is quick ciphering $823 billion away from becoming the world's first trillionaire. Ah, chin up, Jeff. You can do it, buddy. Sure. Meanwhile, you know, people like Marsha Gedness Blackburn are having a conniption over $400 billion for elder care in the United States. Yeah, doesn't make me feel too any particular good either. You know whose fault all of this is, though? Complaining about billionaires and the like. George Soros. Sure. Oh, what the shits is, Lamar the Magnificent, talking about Helen Keller. How the fuck do they explain Stevie Wonder? What the fuck? Well, Stevie's still alive, so they can't deny his existence. Next up, Ray Charles wasn't real. Ray Charles couldn't really play the piano because he was... Oh, my God. Don't get me started.
Come on, Robin, says Jeremy in Vermont. We all know that Helen isn't real. She's just a crisis actor who took that pen name to hide her day job. She really turns the ceiling fan lights on when Flat Earth turns off the fake blue sky. Get with the program and do your own damn research.
I don't have time to do out here, do your research for you. God damn it.
No, it's George Soros' fault.
Yep.
Enter Shane Vaughn. He's the gospel sharp down at, because it's prayer meeting Wednesday, you know. He's the gospel sharp down to Mississippi's First Harvest Ministries. Wasn't long back when he said that, no, it's Donald Trump who got the COVID relief bill through Congress. You know, the one that not a single Republican voted for. Sure. And one of the things that comes with the ubiquity of streaming internet is that we get to actually see them and hear them in their abject, monumental, manifest stupidity. In this case, and I don't know why Shane Vaughn of First Harvest Ministries in Mississippistan, I'm guessing he couldn't find South Africa on a map if you gave him a GPS and held the globe for him and pointed his fingers, and no, couldn't do that with his own ass, probably. But he went on a tear, Shane Vaughn did, because lo, these many years after, and if Kevin in South Africa is listening, he's going to be tearing at his hair and leaping out the door to eat dirt and run rabbits. In the long, long years after the fall of apartheid in South Africa, at least one man standing alone, Shane Vaughn of First Harvest Ministries. Well, he knows what that did. What George Soros did to South Africa. And he knows, by God, how he did it. Yes.
You remember in South Africa, that was a colony of Great Britain. It had a monarchy, a tradition of monarchy there for many, many years. And South Africa was a...
Yeah, many, many years there was a monarchy in South Africa known as the King of South Africa. Doesn't even know about the Commonwealth. But don't let's get lost in the details. No, hell no.
A wonderful nation. But it was a closed society. It had a...
It was a wonderful nation, South Africa, with that wonderful apartheid. Mm-hmm. And the wonderful P.W. Botha. And wonderful restrictions on class and race and all kinds of wonderful means of determining who couldn't participate in civil society and who had to step off the sidewalk and who could be indefinitely jailed and who could be beaten to death in police interrogation rooms. It was a wonderful society, but it was a closed society. How many wonderful closed societies are you aware of?
Was a wonderful nation, but it was a closed society. It had a queen. It had an identity.
The Queen of South Africa. Did this guy drop out before, I mean, what, is he a fourth grade dropout?
The Commonwealth with Great Britain. Oh. It was identified there. It had traditions. It had its own history. Soros said these words, and I quote, "Where could I find a better opportunity for opening up a closed society?" So he brings his money down to South Africa and he funds the university with scholarships for black youth in apartheid South Africa.
Oh, my God, not scholarships for black youth in apartheid South Africa. Why isn't he wearing his little pointy hat? Where's his bed sheet and pillowcase?
You know, it's been the goal of George Soros all his life to enhance civil society, participation in it, inclusion in it, which, you know, people of color in South Africa weren't. Oh, my God. Oh, my God, scholarships. They must so have thoroughly offended the coin of South Africa.
To South Africa, and he funds the university with scholarships for black youth in apartheid South Africa.
Imagine.
When he opens that school, he changes South Africa, and look what he did down there. Look at the division that came between the white South Africans and the black South. Now they're killing them by the thousands.
Who's killing whom? Wait a minute. Division between white South Africans and black South Africans? How about the none of the above? How about Mohandas K. Gandhi, a young lawyer in the waning days of the 19th or the beginning days of the 20th century? I'm pretty sure that's before George Soros was born, and that society was badly divided.
Taking their land. Why? Because he divided South Africa with this open society. Remove the culture, remove the law, remove the foundation of the society, turn the races against one another, and then you take the nation and you create now an open society.
That's a problem. I mean, North Korea is a closed society too. Yeah. Again, my eternal gratitude to whoever the poor soul is at Right Wing Watch who watches this bilge, and probably has to knock down a fifth of Deep Eddie vodka every night just to make it to the next day. But here's the thing: I'm pretty sure that Shane Vaughn didn't go into this because he's fascinated with South Africa. He did that because he was drawing a parallel with America today and how Joe Biden is dividing us by trying to make America a more open and civil society. I've never heard of this cat before, Shane Vaughn. But if this is the tear he's off on, I bet you we hear from him again later. Oh, hell yeah. South African George Soros, Jeremy is just not okay. What the literal fuck, Edith, did he just say? And he said exactly what you thought he said. Before George Soros was born, don't you know George Soros is Satan and Satan's always been here? Exactly, Lee, exactly. Wonderful apartheid, Lee adds, you know, it was great until economic pressure made it change. Watch out, Georgia! That's probably exactly where he was going. But you knew there was going to be some prayer meeting Wednesday shenanigans, didn't you? This is proving to be one of the harder weeks that we've had here at the Horn. This first full week of April. And a $10 challenge on the table hasn't been touched, courtesy of Joey and Giraffe, $10. Trying to get us down to $810 for our fundraising hole. Bupkis. And little shoestring radio networks don't last long when we can't even raise $100 over the course of 3 days outside of subscriptions. But we're at $830 to go. And on the pace we're at, we will be at $1,430 by Friday. Whew. I don't like thinking about it. Nonetheless, let's run over to the stress line and see who's there. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Robin.
Oh, hey, is that you, Jude?
It's me, kind of tired out, but I wanted to, I just wanted to kind of give you maybe a breather before you do Mike's program and kind of shift the conversation just a tiny bit.
But okie dokie.
Going back into yesterday, you know, with that North Carolina bill and the transgender children and, you know, what it must be like for, you know, for the parents and families and the child, you know, the children themselves. But I wanted to share a story with you about the first time I met two lovely, fun women. It was up in, and they were transgender, and it was my first encounter. My daughter had gifted me with a weekend up in a bed and breakfast up in the Snoqualmie Pass, and Jimmy and Mike from Cascadia will identify with it. It's just, you know, it's up in the Cascades, so it's real powerful. And we get there, and it's all dedicated to railroad, and it used to be a bunkhouse for the engineers and the crew when they come out of the mountains and such. And so it's two stories, and it's an L shape, and it's just got tons of things, and mostly it's the Milwaukee Railroad. So we go upstairs, and they show me the room, and the rooms are dedicated to different individuals, you know, throughout the years that have worked for the railroad. And my daughter did research and got me my father's room. And my dad was an engineer for the Milwaukee Railroad, and he actually died coming out of those mountains. He had a massive coronary. So we get settled in the room, and Gab takes off, and she's going down the hallway, and she comes back. She goes, Nana, she says, you've got to come. She says, there's two men dressed up as women. I said, oh, okay. So we walk down the hallway, and they're all old, charming rooms, and the door's open, and they're kind of rearranging different things. And I said, hi, and I introduced myself, and they came over and introduced Gab and just talked, you know, I was able to share bits and pieces about my dad and such, and that was it. And we said goodbye, and we're going down the hallway, and Gab looks at me, and she goes, oh, Nana, how fun. She said, I like them. Well, later on, the next morning we had breakfast and such, and they came up and they wanted to know if I'd like to go to a gathering they were going to be having in that little community. One of the women was from Oregon, and the other one was from just outside of Portland, up on the Washington side. So I said, sure. So that evening I'm waiting outside, we get in the car and we're driving, and I'm in the back seat. And they're both animated and talking with each other. And it was just, it was so widely open and endearing to not know these women at all. And yet I had this kinship with them. So we get to the, where they were having the gathering in this huge two-story log cabin with a group of carrots wrapped around. And it was just filled with wives there. You know, like a net, because it's heart-rendering for me to share this with you, Robin, how I would envision a net with you, you know, with, you know, going out with a group of people. And it was so down-to-earth and so comfortable. And I'm sitting off to the side, and this man comes over, and he sits down next to me, and he starts talking about different things. And he's got, just for kind of a visual, he's sitting astride, so he's got both his, you know, legs open and kind of resting on his, you know, his palms are resting on his knees. And he says to me, he says, what kind of moisturizer do you use? I says, well, gosh, I just use soap, and kind of, you know, got me for a second. And when he said that, he ended up crossing his legs over and you know, his whole countenance, her countenance came out. And it was a lovely experience. And I hadn't really thought about it until you, you know, shared, you know, your journey, what was going on in your life and the individuals, you know, that I've met since then. But I'll end the story with decades later, I'm on hospice and I'm going into the home of someone, and this older man opens the door and he goes, "Who are you?" And I told him who I was. He said, "Okay, come on in." He's just real, those crackly kinds of hospice patients were my, I love doing that because it just, you know, just let it all out and, you know, just let it be cleansed. So I pull the stool up and he sits down and he's just going on and on. He's, you know, "I don't know, how come you couldn't have made this earlier?" And so I'm looking around the room and he's got all this railroad memorabilia. And I says, "Gosh," I said, "you know, my father was an engineer for the Milwaukee." And he goes, "Who was your father?" So I told him. And he sat back in his chair and he goes, "You know," he says, "my train was a train that followed your dad's when your dad died at the engine." Isn't that just a...
Oh, my God.
What a powerful circle to close. And it was just, you know, we ended up talking about, you know, just so many different things. So I wanted just to give you a little bit of solace and let you know that I appreciated yesterday and especially the first part of the program today. I can't remember what your plea was. We were talking about, you know, the exploration, you know, into space and all of that. And you said something. It wasn't like, I need wisdom or, do you remember what that was?
Offhand, I can't, because that was a 3-hour filler obster and took a lot out of me.
Oh, I know it. I could hear it. Yeah, I could hear it. That's why I wanted to call you tonight, and just and it was excellent for Mike's program last night too.
Well, thank you.
And that business about the Bundys, it's very dangerous times, you know. And I'm with you. What went on January 6th, it's some kind of, you know, those ping pong machines that had those great big metal balls going up and down. That's what goes off on me every so often. You know, I've had to really focus and concentrate to do peace stands because it's just the weight of so much. You know, because those Proud Boys and that Patriot, the prayer patriots, you know, they're here. I mean, they're all over. But
no, they got their origins are in the Pacific Northwest. I guess the Proud Boys actually started in Canada, but, I mean, our buddy Dave Nywert, who lives out kind of in your neck of the woods, has documented them. He's been on this program. He's documented them for years and knows exactly what their goals are, what their, you know, what they aim to do. They are fascist brawlers. And they mean no good.
No, they don't. And, you know, the possibility is real for all of these, you know, the connection of that. I mean, I can't bear to have to watch the videos that come out of the Capitol, but I have to, which I'm sure you do the same. It's horrible to watch. And so just think that everything was left just for the Capitol Police. I mean, that in itself is pretty, you know, staggering. That doesn't make any sense at all. When you brought up earlier about being, you know, people being gassed, remember, you know, the boots down in Portland when the 5,000 of us were standing across the street from the courthouse, completely silent, Robin, completely silent. It's about 10:15 at night. And then all of a sudden you hear you hear ancient drums drumming, you know, this methodical thing, and the floodlights are coming on from the U.S. courthouse there, and that's all you hear is this drumming and the silence. And then we get that first warning that it's an illegal gathering, and we're standing on the park. No one's even in the street. So, and then what happened when all that was dispersed, and then this thing of January 6th, it just, Well, we know. I mean, we know where we are.
Yeah, and it's the knowledge that is terrifying.
Mm-hmm. And how important it is to be able to talk about it and get it processed. You know, so many people just allow it to become so engulfed within it, which is justifiable in every single way, but then it doesn't allow the room to start seeing the possibilities. And I appreciate the time.
Oh gosh, all that you could possibly want or need. I appreciate it so very much. And it's deeply painful, you know, watching this hate be promulgated across so much of the country, especially in parts of the country that I grew up in and live in and have loved. And to realize that there are, you know, when you look around, because I've had a fantastic, beautiful experience so far, but the fact of the matter is, the people of my state sent the people to the legislature who are, you know, we have the same sorts of hateful bills here. And that means that, you know, an elected representative is a mirror of the attitudes of the people who sent him to office or her. And yeah. And so, you know, when you talk about, say, Alabama or Arkansas, that means a majority of the people there are as awful as those elected representatives are. I realize that's a broad and sweeping generalization, and it's probably, I don't know, maybe it's unfair. I'm not sure. Because if the vast majorities of people in Arkansas or Alabama or what were against it, they might not be doing it. But being as how it's prayer meeting Wednesday, we know what goes on in these pulpits.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And we know that it's completely at odds with anything that's actually in their holy book. Mm-hmm. So that.
It's truly an altered reality. You know, in the warehouse they have these those forklifts, but they're huge. They can raise up like, you know, four-story, you know, shelving things are huge. And it reminds me of, I always tell my sister, gosh, I feel like I'm in The Matrix, you know, that movie with
Keanu Reeves.
Yeah, and this altered reality of where so many are right now, and dangerously so with their guns and everything, it just makes, you know, for me personally, and I didn't phrase it, to be brave and call you and talk with you, you know, because it brings me back to the ground of my being, that I can never, you know, overstep my insecurities and, you know, my doubts about things and be regrounded again. So it's finding individual things that bring us back to ourselves again. You know, we made a great big stew last night, wonderful stew, you know.
Oh, yummy.
Carrots and everything. Yeah, and it was, you know, it was a comforting thing as just a small group of people. Well, it's good to be able, I was hoping too that, and we're kind of doing that it's more of an interactive dialogue, because I know before I might have been not overbearing, but more.
You couldn't, Jude, you could not be overbearing, no? Dear, if you brought, you could not be overbearing if you rode into the program on a bear. I mean, that's the definition of overbearing, and you can't do it.
Okay. Well, that's good.
No, that's a beautiful story. And of course, I continue one of these days, I want to see your corner of the world. And, you know, it's so frustrating to watch this country struggle to get people vaccinated so that we can see and travel and go and do again. because of course there are too many people in this country who are like, yeah, well, I'm going to go and travel and see and do, and I'm going to take the virus with me and spread it around a little bit like mustard on a hot dog. And I hate it. I really do.
We've got a huge surge again. If I heard correctly, maybe Jimmy or Mike from Cascadia can help. But we have an outbreak, and the courts are all in the Republican, counties around the state. And I thought, I heard in the news today, that we were going to be taken back to step two or level two. I mean,
you're fortunate in that you probably have the single most competent governor in the United States.
Yes, yes, yes.
And, meanwhile, down in, I don't know if you know this or not, but down in California, I guess Gavin Newsom is facing a recall. And now, on top of that, there are rumblings that, oh, my God, Caitlyn Jenner is going to run as a Republican for governor of California. And just please, no.
See, it's that altered reality,
If you're Caitlyn Jenner, how do you wake up one morning and go, you know what, I need to be governor of California? I don't know beans when the bags open about government, but I, by God, need to be governor of California. You know, we thought it was a little nutty when Arnold said he wanted to be governor. But it's living proof, Jude, that every time we think we found the basement, there's another trap door and further down to go.
Absolutely. Well, speaking of Schwarzenegger, there was that caller last week. Remember, he was talking about bodybuilders, and it was that Arnold got in because I think it was his grandfather that had been a bodybuilder.
Yes.
Yeah, that was pretty fascinating. That was a great interchange.
Oh, fascinating happens all the time on this program, Jude, but you know that because you've been part of the community for so very long.
Yeah, it just was, but that sense of big ego, wanting to be seen. And I'm not saying that about Schwarzenegger, but I mean, yeah, it's just a lot. It's a lot.
Well, it is. And let me ask, have you gotten your vaccine? I mean, are you fully vaccinated yet?
My second one is next week.
Did you get Pfizer or Moderna?
No, I got Moderna. Yeah.
Did you handle the first one okay?
I had next day I had slight nausea and a little bit of chills, but I think pretty well. But I'm strong. I mean, I'm very active. I do yoga and, I'm very focused on, because there's a lot of stuff we got to do. So.
You mentioned that. I've been thinking about that, and not from a fad standpoint, but just something that would work. Because I have to get in considerably better shape than I am now. I quit smoking and ate the world, and I need to shed a bunch of pounds, lower my A1C, and maybe that's an avenue for me. I don't know. I know some people around here who teach it, but I mean, I don't know diddly about it. The last thing I remember about stretching was doing it in football pads. When I was 16 years old, and a little bit of stretching at the ballet bar, and a little bit in theater school, but I mean, is it accessible? I mean, is there a lot of vocabulary? I mean,
oh my gosh, no! I just do. I'm outside right now. It just started pouring rain. I don't know if you can hear it. It's kind of neat. Just get a comfortable mat, sit down. And get adjusted to your body, move your shoulders, and then just start reaching out on a straight level, not down to your ankles, but just straight out, back and forth, and just be conscious of each muscle each time you move it. I do a yoga thing. I've never been, I don't do it, videos or anything, but I have my own routine down, and it is so, it gets those electrical currents going. It gets the blood flowing. The breathing helps release the tension going on.
But,
it's a wonderful way.
And you can understand maybe what I'm getting at when I say that I see these videos of people standing on their heads and
And I'm like, that's never going to happen for me. That's just never going to happen.
Well, I guess it would be, what would be the purpose for you wanting to do that? You know, if you have something inside of you that's pulling you, then just let your body tell you what it is it wants to do. It'll let you know.
That's the problem, Jude. My body's going to tell me it wants a snack. I mean, and we're back to the initial problem.
Okay, yeah. Well then I'll start sending you some photos, some visuals of different positions.
that would be great. I actually when I was gone down to Alabama almost a year and a half ago now, I bought a mat, and I sat on it a lot. I sat on it a lot. To, you know, watch TV in the morning. I'm just so bad at this stuff. Just so bad, Jude. I'm hoping
it's new.
Yeah, I'm hoping to just, you know, I got to start walking, sweating, and get things back in order, because this is just, I got too much stuff that on my plate and too much stuff that I'm looking forward to, and I got to get there.
But you're Robin, and you're not smoking.
Yes. No, I'm...
So that's good.
My last bad habit is my little nicotine pouches, and that's it.
Mm-hmm.
And they got to go,
but
too.
But that brings you back... Yeah, well, just a reminder that you have come a long way. Sometimes, you know, one looks ahead, you know, thinking, you know, what's going to happen, when all we have right in front of us is just the moment at hand. So here... You know, maybe tonight when you sit on that mat, you might stretch your arms out, or you might bend forward, or do just something. Just some simple little thing, something different, even if it's for a second. Hey, why not? Why not?
Indeed. Indeed. Jude, you are constantly, and I mean this, I'm not being sarcastic, you are a ray of sunshine. You absolutely are.
Well, thanks. Yeah. It's connecting with the light, you know, just trying to.
Exactly.
Yeah. Trying to, yeah. So you take good care, and thank you so much.
It always makes me feel better.
Well, then good.
And because you're tapping into that Buddha energy, and it's so absolutely obvious.
Mm-hmm. Well, it happens when we interact with each other. That's how it raises and heightens, and you know, it's about possibilities, but also it's concerning time. So,
indeed.
Anyway, you be well, and
I will. Getting better, honest to God, getting better all the time, Jude.
Yeah, good. Okay.
All right. You have a lovely evening, and you know, if you feel the need to go out and dance in the rain, you know. Go out and dance in the rain.
Hey, I was dancing in the warehouse today with my little cleaning cart, you know? Just
why not?
Just gotta move.
Well,
yeah, just gotta move.
You know what Kurt Vonnegut said? I believe we were put here to dance.
Oh, I love it. No, I didn't know he said that. Maybe when I'm dancing, I'm channeling him.
Could be. Jude, you have a lovely evening.
Thanks, hopefully
we will talk soon.
Okay. All right.
Bye now. There's no one quite like Jude. There's just not. And she is such a delight. And she really does. She can lighten the mood just with the energy of her being. And that's pretty special. So we are into the third hour of the program. Got a couple of challenges on the table now. Our anonymous friend says, I'll cover that $10 from Joey and Giraffe's challenge, and I'll put forth a $50 anonymous when billionaires choose you lose challenge. Thank you very much. And Ralph said, I got 20 if others have 20. And so that would mean the chance to get us down to... 680, and we would actually be done with all but, I guess, let's see, this is what, yeah, all we'd be done with all but 80 of Monday. And that's a huge step forward on a on what has been a slow week. And I know how hard it is for people. So don't. It's not me pissing and moaning. It's just about trying to keep this all going. Kicking Bad Habits, Jerry in Vermont says, as I told you, you're giving up death sticks has inspired me to quit soda. So far, I'm 2.5 weeks without a Coke and 1.5 weeks no soda whatsoever. And I don't want any. It seems gross to me at this point. Yeah, when you get to the point where you haven't had it in a while, and I mean, I tried a Diet Sprite. I was on air. What was it, Monday? And about half the bottle is still sitting here. Because it was just so cloying and so, and you know, when it's diet anyway, it's not the, and just no. And so I'm back to happily slurping away on my planet-killing, brought to you by Nestle's sparkling water, and I'm going to drink that up till it's gone and hope that there's nothing desperately wrong with the Kroger brand Simple Truth organic sparkling water. I mean, is it, see, there's the sparkling water. But it raises the question, how is water not organic? But we will leave that profound question for later, I guess. I've given a lot of thought to whether I should run this clip, but it being... it being prayer meeting Wednesday, and this individual being a fine, good, God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical, fundamentalist, Republican Christian, well, it kind of says, yeah, let's do it. Dave, number 11, I've tried the seafood diet, and that's how I got where I am. Dave, number 11, said, the seafood diet? If I see food, I eat it. Yeah, and the only way to really make that one to work for you is to put on a blindfold. That's what I've been doing since September 15th. Ooh, that looks good. Hey, let's eat a whole bag of Cheetos. God, Cheetos are my enemy. And that nasty-ass liquid cheese goo dip that tastes so good and is so awful and horrible and bad. Yuck. Oh, but speaking now, before we go to the clip of questionable provenance, not provenance, but taste. Big thank yous. Thank you, Colon. Colon answered the "When Billionaires Choose, You Lose" challenge. Colon answered the challenge coming from Ralphs, and went a little further. So let's see. That's. We're down to 610, and now we're down to 600 even. We're done with Monday. Monday is funded. Thank you. Thank you to Jude. Thank you to Colon. Thank you to Ralphs. Thank you to our anonymous friend. Thank you, Joey and Giraffrey. Thank you all so kindly. We're down. Yeah, we got Monday. We got Monday covered. And that, I cannot tell you how amazing that is. Thank you. Thank you so very much. But since we were talking about water there a minute ago, I have this sitting in the stacks. And it's got a... There's a real what the fuck about this. The FDA, and again, and, you know, we're gonna have an ongoing, I guess, the segment of the program, What a Difference an Election Makes. You know, for those four benighted years of Geezer Disgustus's reign, it was as though we were trying to, and it's any time a Republican gets in office, you know, we can't be worrying about the environment too much because, you know, our friends are big polluters. And what was it, Monday, we were talking about the, oh my God, impoundment crisis in Florida where 300 people have been evacuated. And it's not getting nearly the coverage it deserves. Water is life, y'all. And
Yeah, I feel real crummy that I'm sitting here drinking a Nestle product. But apparently there's worse. The FDA, about a week ago, took issue with a Nevada-based company called Real Water. And there's a fad in water products. I don't know how to describe it as anything else. For alkaline water. You know, in chemistry, you're either acidic or basic. And alkaline is basic, if I recall correctly. And I tried some. And son of a gun, if it didn't give me a headache. But there's a company out of Nevada called Real Water. No, really. And the FDA is involved in a multi-state investigation of Real Water. Because, well, the company that produces Real Water has apparently been poisoning its customers. And they sold it in those, you know, 5-gallon bottles that you put on top of the water cooler. And they sold it in bottles and, you know, Real Water. And they had home delivery. And the FDA wanted to have some words with the company. But the lawyer for the Real Water company says they can't find the plant manager or the, and I don't know if this is the word lead or lead, but their lead technician or their lead technician, maybe the technician who keeps the lead out of the water, I don't know. But among other things, people who have drunk Real Water have wound up with acute liver failure. And there have been a number of other health problems in adults, in children, and yeah, in our little four-legged fur baby friends. Back in the middle of March, the FDA, in conjunction with the Southern Nevada Health District, said they were looking into cases of acute non-viral hepatitis, which is what causes the acute liver failure, in 5 infants and children, each one of whom had consumed the alkaline water from Real Water. I mean, do we of a certain age remember Westerns, you know, movies, where the thirsty old cowboy taking off his hat in the hot desert sun and wiping his brow with the hat and putting it back on and wringing out the sweat out of his dirty, sweaty bandana just to try to get a little sip. And he comes up on some water, and inevitably, where's Dan Fisher when I need him? Inevitably, there's a bleached out, dried out cow skull next to the pool or puddle. And the cowboy knows not to drink that water because it's alkaline. And will kill you deader than Pharaoh's cat, just like it did, or Pharaoh's cow for that matter. And so lawsuits are proliferating against Real Water. 3 California women filed a federal lawsuit in Nevada trying to get class action status. I've never seen this stuff. Thank God. I probably would have bought it for novelty purposes. There's a brand of water out there called Liquid Death. Oh, there's Lucy Purr. No, and it builds, you know, alkaline water. One good swig of that and you'll have a whopper of a headache, or at least I did. The FDA, the Real Water is still out there hustling its product on social media. It's all been recalled. And the FDA said, therefore, the FDA is reiterating that it is crucial that consumers, restaurants, distributors, and retailers not drink, cook with, sell, or serve Real Water alkaline water. Given a lack of cooperation by the firm, FDA investigators have been unable to complete the investigations. God almighty, it almost makes you think that the Trump family is bound to be invested in this. FDA investigators have been unable to complete investigations. The agency has twice issued the company a demand for records under the Federal Food, Drug, and Cosmetic Act. And then finally, a week ago last Monday, lawyer Charles Lobello told the district judge on the case, Judge Elizabeth Gonzalez, he has no idea where the company's plant manager or lead technician is, and that's out of a story from the Las Vegas Review Journal. And this is one of those moments when the lawyer gets real sheepish in court. Your Honor, I realize there's some litigation going on here, but as an officer of the court, Your Honor, I'm going to tell you that I can't find my client. And it does happen. The technician, nope. Incommunicado, no idea where they are. Plant manager, can't do that either. There's been difficulty getting a hold of them. Could I have a couple of weeks to try to track them down? Yeah. On the other hand, there's another company lawyer named Laura Ungaro, and she said, I can't imagine how they could say we're not cooperating. We've done everything but stand on our heads for them. Anything and everything they want, we've made available to them. And you know what? The likelihood that the Trumps are involved with this just continues to grow. Because the president of Real Water is Brent Jones. And he's a former legislator, a Republican legislator in the state of Nevada. And his response to, you know, having customers with acute liver failure was to put out a two-minute video. And he said, we offer the deepest sympathy and concern over the events that led to the inquiry. But if you go to their website, it says, down for maintenance! And there's a link to the Republican former Nevada lawmaker's video there. And apart from that, not so much. Water. Yeah. Sheesh. So, just as a public service via the horn, if you've got any real water in your home, get rid of it. Don't even touch it. Try not to let it splash. Get the hell rid of it. It's poison. Might as well come with a dried out, bleached out cow skull on the label. And I know. Oh, wait. Play on words. Okay. That's for our buddy John in PA. Liver failures aren't cute, Robin. No. And in fact, we were talking about Helen Keller earlier in the script to The Miracle Worker. There's a scene where the doctor tells Captain and Mrs. Keller that little Helen has acute rheumatic fever. And Mrs. Keller says, well, I don't care what you call it. I don't think there's anything cute about it. God, the little connections on this program. My God. No, liver failures aren't cute. I agree, John. I agree entirely. As Randy Radar points out, alkaline water, also oxygenated water, is full of free radicals. Not good. You know, there's good radicals and bad radicals. January 6th, in Washington, D.C., the Capitol was attacked by a bunch of right-wing free radicals. Work with me here. I'm doing my best. Yeah, cheese problems, Randy Radar added. Wispride cheddar cheese spread with port wine is my downfall. Well, it sounds like it probably would be mine, too. But I don't think it's the actual cheese stuff that's so bad. Actual cheese. It's the cheese goo that's made with like vegetable oil with some cheese type food flavoring in it that'll really bust you. Because like the real actual, no kidding, blueberry Stilton that we get, that's some special stuff. And I ran across, and we haven't tried it yet, food porn segment, Honey Lemon Wensleydale. And anybody familiar with the Monty Python cheese shop skit will know Wensleydale. Oh, no, I thought you were speaking to me. Wensleydale, that's my name, Mr. Wensleydale. No, we don't have any. The things you learn. And Brother Deacon Asa says, that organic sparkling water, it better be non-GMO or I'm not having a blessed sip. Genetically modified. Oh, of course. Of course it's non-GMO. It's vegan, cruelty-free, and gluten-free. Sparkling organic water. But I'm sorry. I'm not drinking anything that's coming out of the American water, tap water here. Mm-mm, no. Just no. I know what the pipes that shit goes through look like. Really. So, no, I mentioned the really, but again, it's prayer meeting Wednesday, and so can't be helped. And thus we go over to, again, our friends at Right Wing Watch caught this. We've talked about this this Lulu in the past. Her name is Angela Stanton King. And just as a sort of a caveat, what this thing, what this clip is about is her being upset about the way things worked out on the taping of the Dr. Phil show. So, yeah, fuck Dr. Phil. You know, he's a grifter and a grafter and a creep, and there's no doubt about that. But Angela Stanton King has made some sort of a life for herself being what is referred to as a television personality and a motivational speaker. She's from Atlanta. And she did 2 years in the stir for conspiracy. And then, of course, Nitwit Nero pardoned her. She's a cue ball. What she was pardoned for was her role in a car theft ring. And then she had a baby while she was in prison. And then she became a reality TV star. You know, kind of like Kim Kardashian, famous for being famous. Not near as famous as a Kardashian, though. But she was on The Real Housewives of Atlanta. And at present, I guess she's a candidate, or was a candidate for Congress in 2020 in Georgia. She ran for John Lewis's seat and was thumped. She only got the nomination because nobody else was silly enough to run for the Republican nomination in that district. Indeed, after John Lewis passed away, his replacement, Nkema Williams, thumped her. It was a landslide. Angela Stanton King got 14.9% of the vote. And she's one of the she's one of those rarest of people, a black maggot
So that's the setup. She tweeted the QAnon slogan repeatedly and amplified the absolutely ludicrous claims that formed the basis of the cucumbers. She was on camera with The Guardian and said that she believed in it and then stomped out of the interview. And then as recently as CPAC in 2021, she confirmed that she was a cue ball. And so we get up to the present. We are not talking about a particularly stable human being. Or else maybe we're talking about somebody who has learned to manipulate media so as to get attention. And I can't sort out the booker at the Dr. Phil show who booked her, except for the fact that they knew that, you know, like professional wrestling, they were gonna get a live one. And they did, because they booked her. And again, I kind of cringe at this. They booked her to come on and talk about her transgender child, which is a form of, I mean, when you know you've got a hateful person and you deliberately give them a platform to be hateful, in my universe, you're kind of complicit in the hate. No matter how much hand-wringing or pearl-clutching Dr. Phil did or didn't do. That poor kitty cat. And so this is the clip, and it's gross. But it's also emblematic. It does have its own independent value. It's emblematic of what the community goes through. And when we talk, for instance, about, every November, there's the Trans Day of Remembrance. It's a day dedicated to remembering and grieving for trans people who have been murdered all over the country. About one a day. And without doubt, the people who are most often murdered are trans women of color. And for a variety of reasons, all of which are horrifying. And so with all that as the backstory, I guess, and I don't know when it's going to air, I don't know how far ahead they tape this crap, but with all that as prologue, this. And again, she was booked so she would say this, which makes it, again, exploitative. But damn.
I'm the bad parent because they can't force me to believe that my son is a woman. So I'm going to tell you this. Fuck Dr. Phil. Fuck his motherfucking wife. Fuck goddamn Paramount Studios. Fuck all you other crazy, dumbass son of a bitches that think a dick can somehow magically turn into a pussy. It's not motherfucking happening. That's the bottom line. I held it down. It was some ghetto ratchet shit, but I don't give a fuck because I'm standing on mine. At the end of the day, my son is a man. And the rest of y'all need to stand on your shit too. I don't give a fuck what label these people have by their name. Common sense is, we know damn well a man cannot be a woman, okay? If you were supposed to be a woman, you wouldn't have to go and have surgery to get titties put on your breasts. You would already be born with them. If you was a woman, you wouldn't be born with a dick. You wouldn't have to go get your dick cut off. Now, I'm going to stick to common sense, okay?
Yeah, you do that. And assuming that this all wasn't just a setup for some professional wrestling scene, that, and I know it's a broad assumption, and assuming that
This isn't made up. And not knowing much about the child or the age, anything about the age of the child. Holy shit. That child is going to have to grow up in that home. And it is shocking, but not shocking. It is, in fact, all too entirely fucking typical. It's a day that ends in Y. Granted, I have the mental image of having the on top of the breastuses, and I don't even know what that would look like. But this is the modern face of compassionate conservatism, y'all. Remember when compassionate conservatism was all the rage in the Republican Party? Yeah, I do. But I wish I knew more backstory. If the child had come out on social media or something, and this was the backlash, how does this get set up? If this is real, how does that child get to where they feel safe? And what a monumental display of just vulgar, vicious stupidity. But, you know, that's a maggot for you. I wonder what would happen if some... Darlene, yeah, me too. Oh, my God, Darlene says, I feel for that poor child. I hope Child Protective Services keeps an eye on her because she's abusive, but that isn't saying much. And Jeremy points out, this is the type of parent or person who is a trans child suicide in the making. My God, what must it be like to wake up with that in your home? Maybe the child isn't in her home. Maybe that's the whole problem. Is this the child she gave birth to in prison? But that's MAGA, y'all. That's Christianity. She's a fine, good, God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical Christian Republican. And a follower of Donald Trump, to whom she will be forever grateful for having pardoned her for her role in a car theft ring. Back to the cheesy poofs. 99 cents at the discount grocery, says Dave, number 11. My blood level is about 8% cheese puff. Barbara's cheese puffs, jalapeno flavored. Yeah, those look good. Those are pure poison for me. But damn, they look good. Gluten-free, real aged cheese, 7-ounce bag. And you can get 12 bags for $37.27. Oh, get thee behind me, Satan. It is prayer meeting Wednesday, after all. And back to Angela Stanton King. Brother Deacon Asa says, a dick can't magically turn into a pussy unless Donald Trump grabs it. There's about 20 audio drops in that clip right there. That's a gold mine, Robin. I know. The one about the titties growing on top of the breast is just, I think you'd have to have a police sketch artist just to visualize it. Not that anybody wants to. Well, you know, these things happen on prayer meeting Wednesday. But as was the case yesterday, how about a little good news? And out of Talibama, no less. Down there, and I think we covered this story in the past. If you wanted to register to vote in Talibama, you had to sign an oath under penalty of perjury that read as follows. I am a U.S. citizen. I live in the state of Alabama. I will be at least 18 years of age on or before Election Day. I am not barred from voting by reason of a disqualifying felony conviction. The list of disqualifying felonies is available on the Secretary of State's website at sos.alabama.gov/mtfelonies. I have not been judged mentally incompetent in a court of law. And then this. I solemnly swear or affirm to support and defend the Constitution of the United States and the state of Alabama and further disavow any belief or affiliation with any group which advocates the overthrow of the governments of the United States or the state of Alabama by unlawful means, and that the information contained herein is true, so help me God. That was the legal requirement to register to vote in Alabama until recently. Well, the good news part of this is that atheists in Alabama sued, and of course, they won after forcing the state of Alabama to chose to oppose the litigation. Yeah. The Freedom From Religion Foundation, not afraid to burn in hell. Filed suit on behalf of atheist Randall Cragen, but was prevented from, who, when he wanted to register to vote, was prevented from being able to register because he could not sign something that said, so help me God. He calls the Alabama Secretary of State's office. They say, you either sign the form or you don't vote. And if you cross out a portion of the oath, the Board of Registrars in your county will reject the application and ask you to resubmit. And so the Freedom From Religion Foundation then turns around and sends a letter. Come on, you're in the wrong. You know it. Let's save us all a bunch of money. Just fix it. Nothing. Bupkis. So they sued last October. The Secretary of State and the state of Alabama are coercing a statement of belief in a monotheistic deity by requiring non-theists to swear to so help me God in order to register to vote. All they had to do was fix, was make it, let the atheist have a form that doesn't have the religious declaration, or just take it out altogether. I do solemnly swear or affirm. You can solemnly swear without a deity. You can affirm without a deity. So now, it's been sort of fixed, and there's a checkbox. You know, just like Donald Trump's campaign had a checkbox that said that was automatically checked, of course, and drained a bunch of people's bank accounts. Optional. Because of a sincerely held belief, I decline to include the final four words of the oath above. Yeah, what? That's not a remedy. That and it kind of shocks me that the Freedom From Religion Foundation said, well, okay, and dismissed their lawsuit. That's not good. Because of a sincerely held belief, I decline to include the final four words of the oath above. Well, an atheist is not someone who believes something. An atheist is someone who doesn't believe things. They don't believe an alternative.
They don't believe it's wrong to say, so help me God. It is wrong for them to say, so help me God. But this is what passes as a little victory in a place like Talibama. And so now atheists are registering to vote honestly in Alabama. Apparently they're not going to give up. They dismissed the suit, but they just need to take the so help me God off. But there's a larger issue here. We know for a fact that Alabamians went to the capital of the United States on January, well, before January the 6th, and participated in the act of attacking the Capitol in an insurrection. I solemnly swear or affirm to support and defend the Constitution of the United States and the state of Alabama, and further disavow any belief or affiliation with any group which advocates the overthrow of the governments of the United States or the state of Alabama by unlawful means. Wait a minute. The state of Alabama is saying that it's okay to advocate the overthrow of the government of the United States through lawful means. There is not a means of overthrowing the government of the United States by lawful means. You can change the government. You can change its tenor. You can change its philosophy. You can change its politics at the ballot box. But that does not constitute an overthrow by unlawful means. So they kind of give themselves away, don't they? There's the state of Alabama saying, well, you know, if we decide that the South's going to rise again, this won't stop you from voting. But the fact of the matter is, the maggot attorney general of the state of Alabama should be filing criminal charges of perjury. Voter declaration, read and sign under penalty of perjury. You get the voter's registration card out for any maggot who was at the insurrection, charge them with perjury, prosecute them, and imprison them. I mean, that should happen in a rational, real kind of world that where a state government takes its words seriously. Ain't gonna happen, but it should. I wonder if Alabama, West Virginia used to. I think it has since been remedied. But West Virginia used to have a little known, little used provision tucked away in the West Virginia Code that said a private citizen could make a presentation to a grand jury. I wonder if Alabama still has that provision or something similar in their code. Because then an enterprising Alabamian could find out what county the insurrectionist came from, go to the district attorney of that county and say, I demand the right to make a presentation to the grand jury against fill in the blank on a charge of perjury for having perjured themselves on their voter registration form. Wouldn't that just be a hot little mess? And wouldn't it be damned fun in the process? Amazing the things you find. And all because a human being couldn't swear to something that no one has ever proved to this day to exist. Wow, sirens are going wild outside. Never a dull moment. Nope. All right, one last thing, because it's prayer meeting Wednesday. And remember bucket pudding? No, this ain't bucket pudding. this, well, Jim Baker's got, well, it is bucket pudding. It's a way to get people to pony up for the bucket pudding. Jim Baker is now warning against the zombie apocalypse. Really? Somebody's been watching a little too much.
Yeah. Zombies that are
zombies
are a disease like any other disease that affects people, and they become like zombies. Mm-hmm. Is that right?
Forgive me, but that's only part of the story. Zombies also have the evil spiritual entity known as demon possession, okay? Because there is no rationale with a zombie.
Let me help here. Dude here that's opining because he's a zombie expert. Steve Quayle, we don't know if he's any kin to Dan, but he's got a real nice background for his little Zoom interview, because it's a series of paintings of lions. I can't quite tell if any of them are velvet. Maybe out of shot is the velvet bullfighter. But that, yeah, that's Steve Quayle, zombie expert.
Zombie. The best way to explain zombies' bloodlust is this: the appetite of demons expressed through humans. It should be astonishing to people that the richest people in the world, not all of them, but some of them, are into occult ceremonies where they have to drink, you know,
cucumbers.
That's extracted from a tortured child. Now that's sick, but that's the.
It's also fantasy, but.
Appetite of demons expressed through humans. The ancient world dealt with monsters, mythological and real. And this is something that is really important to get through.
Minotaurs. Yeah.
The disease will basically destroy the human defenses. God gave us defenses as humans to resist the devil, and he will flee. But when you're inviting, or what's the word I want? Embracing abject demon possession, giving yourself over to be inhabited, be inhabited by the demons who then become your inhabitants. It's a twofold. What I'm saying, Jim, is they can induce zombieism, at least the appetite for human flesh. But at the end of the thing, it's both hands, right hand and left hand.
And let me guess, the zombies... Well, it's some very wealthy people who drink child blood. But I betcha if you give this guy enough bottled in bond, he'll tell you that people who got the vaccine are going to be your zombies.
And the left hand simply is...
Brains. Well, fortunately, neither Jim Baker nor Steve Quayle here are any risk of having their brains eaten by zombies, because it's like that frustrating moment when you're sitting there cracking a bowl of almonds and you're piling up your almonds there, and kind of like what Paul from Parts Unknown does, and every now and then you go crack, and you know there's no almond in the shell. No brain in Steve Quayle or Jim Baker.
The evil spiritual possession of that zombie. So the zombie protocol, and then I think people should say, okay, if this is all wild stuff, why does the military have a manual about it when it happens? Why does the CDC even have anything on their members, Center for Disease Control?
Because it's a joke? Because it's a gag? Because it was a way to get a little PR for the military and the CDC during the big zombie craze? I don't know about you. I mean, there's any number of weapons you can use to fend off a zombie. I favor the iron skillet, the chainsaw, or the Stratocaster guitar.
Or creation. I just call it that. That's my opinion.
Better load up on your bucket pudding, folks. The zombies is coming.
The whole subject of zombies could be just boiled down at one end to a genetically modified human that is no longer human on the level that you and I or a living being is, then that corpse, that walking...
Wait, genetically modified? Does that mean if I eat one of those potatoes that's had the had a gene from a goat's pancreas spliced into it, I'm a genetically modified... Oh, my God. My God. The non-GMO water I've been drinking. Brains. Oh, God, it begins.
I'm animated. There's a better word. It's not living. An animated corpse is possessed by a demonic entity.
Like Bugs Bunny?
A demonic entity has knowledge. It has sentience. It has...
Sentience. It has sentience. I don't know what sentience is, but... They got it. It's kind of like what they got over on the movie set that Jethro Bodine was talking about. You know what they got over there, Uncle Jet? Motivation. They're just swimming in it. These zombies, they got some sentience. And with that, oh God, with that, we will mercifully end the program. Yeah. By the way, a few notes coming in. Matt in San Francisco, bucket pudding. I think there's cheese dip in the bucket pudding, along with strawberry quick. No zombie's gonna come near that. And probably ward them all off. My God, there went... Matt, you just did in dinner in your own time zone. Dude. That's hard. Oh, Cynthia in the Bay Area. Oh, God, do I have to send this stupid fucking idiot my copy of The Demon-Haunted World? Jesus, these people are stupid. But what would we do for a laugh if they weren't there? Velvet? What? No Velvet Elvis? Says Bill in PA. I caught a little bit of my filthy morning habit the other day, and they had another one of those canned interviews, like the one they did with Bill Gates. This one was even more embarrassing, I think. It purported to be an interview with Michio Kaku. It wasn't. It was Joe and Mike Barnicle and Casey Hunt, asking canned questions from the PR folder that came with the copy of Michio Kaku's new book, which mentions the word God, so it'll sell things. It'll sell things, it'll sell books. But the PR flack sheet apparently told the interviewer to ask Dr. Kaku whether Elvis is alive in another universe. And those multimillionaires sat there and waxed eloquent on the possibility of alternate universe Elvis. Why couldn't it be John Lennon? Honestly, Janis Joplin? Robert Johnson. Cut down on his prime. Went down to the crossroads. But no, it's Elvis. And they didn't even ask the important question. Is it young, hip Elvis that's alive in another universe? Or is it fat, white jumpsuit Elvis who's about to go sideways in the little Elvis's room at Graceland that's alive in the other universe? I can't stand shoddy science. No. The cure for zombies? Jeremy says, wait, we know the cure. You've talked about it tonight. Real water. Oh, no. That's witches. You throw the real water on the witch and she dissolves. Oh, my beautiful evil. Yeah. By the way, note coming in from Clarence, formerly of Philly, now of South Carolina, and points all around the country on the Great Open Road. Angela Stanton King, subject line, hood rat. That woman is a certified hood rat. I fear for her child. That mouth on her describes her to a T. The child will most certainly be abused. She and her family will destroy that child. Folks from my inner city neighborhood are hard on the LGBTQ plus community. I hope the Social Services Department takes note of that tirade. What a disgraceful human being. Thanks for that, Clarence. Hopefully the child will be okay. So, here we are, end of the program, and we're $80 from being finished with Monday, and back at it tomorrow, Thorn in the Side Thursday. Stick around for Malloy, 9 p.m. I'll be there. Hope you enjoy it. Thanks to all of our Patreon and PayPal subscribers, partial sponsors of the program. Thank you so much. Thanks to each and every one of our a la carte contributors. Everybody who makes it possible for this little program to continue to exist on this last frayed thread of a dry-rotted sneaker lace. Thank you. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thank you to pinch-hit midweek chat room utility moderator and all-around great guy, Brother Bishop Steve from Georgistan. Congratulations on the inoculations. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa, headon.live. Remember, the best place to listen to the first run of Malloy is at headon.live. Thank you, John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. 20 plus years at the forefront of the struggle for human rights and environmental justice in Appalachia. And remember, if you haven't yet, or if you have, just keep reaching out, especially to your, if you've got a Democratic member of the House of Representatives, ask them, please, for the sake of the suffering of Appalachia, to co-sponsor H.R. 2073, the Appalachian Communities Health Emergency Act. It literally means the world in Appalachia. Get your vaccine when and if you can. Stay home. Stay safe when and you can. Don't quit wearing your mask even if you've gotten a vaccine. Double mask. The variants are out there and they're ugly. Wash your hands, don't touch your face, use hand sanitizer liberally, maintain your social distance 15 feet between people with masks, and at least 15 lion portraits between people who aren't you and people who aren't. And if somebody comes shrieking towards you out of nowhere yelling, "Zombies!" Avoid that person like the plague. Because they are. Later.